Good morning, everybody. It's good to be here today. I'm sure some of you are probably wondering where my wife is. She's at the Northside Church today, and she's doing the Sabbath School superintending and greeting, so she couldn't come with me today, but that's where she is. And yeah, today I wanted to talk about Abram, but first I wanted to talk about the beginning of the world, when God created everything perfect and everything was wonderful, and I wish everything would have stayed like that, don't you? But unfortunately, Adam and Eve, you know, made some mistakes, and now we live in a sinful world, and it didn't take long, just 10 generations, that it was a lot of years, but only 10 generations until God had to start over and send a flood on the earth because the thoughts and intents of men's hearts was only wickedness continually. And so God saved the world through the boat and through Noah and his family, and everything started over. But it wasn't too long until, you know, things got really bad again and people started building the Tower of Babel. And they were trying to, you know, build the tower into heaven. And I always thought when I was a kid growing up that they were building a giant skyscraper, you know, with, like, you know, ancient technology with really good bricks and everything. And they're going to build it until the actual, you know, way up into the sky to try to reach heaven. But recently I found out that's not what they were talking about at all. They were trying to build this temple, like a ziggurat with the different steps to try to reach heaven spiritually through this a religion that relied on false gods. And it's so amazing to me that just a few generations after, you know, the true God had saved Noah and his family, people are already believing in all kinds of other gods and thinking that everything that happens in nature is attributed to all kinds of false gods. And so God had to divide the languages and scatter people across the world, and that helped keep things from getting as, you know, bad as they got before the flood. But still, by the time Abram had come around, it was 10 generations later, just like at the flood when God had to do something. God did something 10 generations after the flood, and he did that through Abram. And Abram didn't have anything special about him said in the Bible until he was 75 years old. We have no idea what his life was like, who he was. He just seemed to be a nobody, and not even a nobody. But if we read in the scripture reading that was so nicely read, thank you, Genesis chapter 12. But backing up a little bit in Genesis chapter 11, we have, you know, the family line of Abram, and it talks about his, you know, how everybody, they became a certain age, and then they had children, and then they died at a certain age. And then it gets to Terah, and it doesn't exactly tell us right away, you know, how old Terah was when he had children, and it doesn't tell us when Terah died until the end of chapter 11, a few verses later, and it doesn't tell us at all about Abram or his brothers when they had children or when they died. But that is supplied later on in the story. And it's interesting that up until now in Genesis, it seems that there are stories of people told, right? There's lots of stories of, you know, people like Enoch and Noah and Cain and Abel and Adam and Eve. But there's no actual in-depth, like, stories of actual narratives of people's life. It's more, those stories are more associated with events that were happening throughout the ages. But now we get to Genesis chapter 12, and it's talking about, it goes much more in-depth in stories. You know, until Genesis 12, it covers thousands of years of history. And now for the rest of Genesis, it's only going to cover a few hundred more years of the history that went on. So it's really zooming in on Abram because he was a very important person, not in himself, but when we read the story of Abram, how he was the, you know, son of Terah, and he had two brothers, and one of his brothers, Nahor, died, and that's how Abram became probably so closely connected to Lot, because you know, he didn't have a father anymore, so he probably attached to Abram as a fatherly figure. And Abram, of course, had no children because it tells us in chapter 11 that Sarai was barren. So not only does Abraham not have anything notable said about him, but also he's would be looked at in those times as being greatly cursed. I mean, it's hard enough for people in our day to not be able to have children if they really want to have children. It's just a sad and hard thing because we in our hearts so much want to have descendants, at least most people do. But back then, it wasn't just that sadness, but also the stigma and people thinking that you are cursed by the God because you couldn't have, that you're cursed by gods, by the gods, because you couldn't have any children. And so Abram and Sarai lived with that for their whole lives until they were 75 years, until Abram was 75 years old. And Abram was from the city Ur of the Chaldeans, right? And that was actually, you know, probably people, modern scholars think from archaeology and from other things that that was actually probably the same exact place where the ancient city of Babel was, where they tried to build the tower and all the languages got mixed up. And so this would have been like, you know, pretty close to where the ark landed, and this would have been and the like center of civilization for that time, not only, you know, hypothetically supposing, but actually archaeology revealed that they that a lot was happening here. This was the center for learning. They had a university there, and they studied the stars and all kinds of things. And they also had a lot of idols, unfortunately. I just can't imagine, like, you know, it seems by the time Abram was born, actually, about 350 years after the flood, Noah had just died, like 2 years before Abram was born. And now in the story, Abram is 75. But still, it was just recently that Noah had died. And I don't think a whole lot of other people would have died before Noah because, you know, after the flood, everything started over. So you didn't have, you know, your forefathers dying and everything because they had such long lives. And this was only 350 years after the flood. And so it seems at this time that people would have known about the true God. There's no way they couldn't have known about him because their you know, great-grandfather was alive just recently. And, you know, and the sons of their great-grandfather, like Shem, was probably still alive at the time. And so they definitely would have known about the true God, but it seems like at large the world had abandoned the true God, and the world had gone into a bad situation, just like before the flood, where everybody had forgotten about God. And I'm sure there's some people who still worship the true God, but at large, it seemed like most people didn't. And we know about Melchizedek is mentioned as a priest of God later in the narrative of Genesis. He seemed to be somebody who was following the true God, and also Abram. But yet Abram still seemed to be influenced by idolatry, didn't he, at the same time? And some people think that at this point when God called Abram, that Abram had never ever heard of the true God at all. It was like he was just an idol worshiper, and all of a sudden he heard of the true God. I don't think that that's the case, because it wouldn't make sense with all the knowledge of the true God that they should have had. But it seems like Abram's life, and especially the life of his family and his father, was very influenced, and, you know, his worship of the true God would have possibly been intermingled with idolatrous worship, if not worship, idolatrous influences. And even in Acts chapter 7 and verse 2, when Stephen is introducing his sermon, he mentions that long ago, well, let me read the verse here, I have it on my paper. It says, "To this he replied, 'Brothers and fathers, listen to me. The God of glory appeared to our father Abraham while he was still in Mesopotamia, before he lived in Haran.'" So, wait, that wasn't the verse I was wanting. I was wanting the one in Joshua chapter 24. So I'll read that one as well. Sorry. In Joshua 24 verse 2, it says, "Joshua said to all the people, 'This is what the Lord, the God of Israel, says. Long ago, your ancestors, including Terah, the father of Abraham, and Nahor, lived beyond the Euphrates River and worshipped other gods.'" So here it spells it out more clearly in the book of Joshua that they were, that it doesn't say Abram was, but it says that Abram's father was worshiping other gods. And this would make perfect sense because Ur of the Chaldeans would have been a principal place of worship of the moon god Sin, and they would have had the same, probably similar furnaces as they used to make the bricks for building the Tower of Babel. They would have also used for melting metal and things to make idols. And yeah, this this is interesting because, you know, later on in the book of Daniel, as we've been studying, not too far, you know, from this ancient city Ur of the Chaldeans is Babylon, where they're also using furnaces to make idols. And the reason why I read Acts 7:2, which I read at the wrong time, is because I thought it was interesting that it said that God appeared to Abraham while he was still in Mesopotamia before he lived in Haran. And it can be a little confusing in the narrative exactly when God called Abram. Was it when he was in Haran or when he was way back in Ur of the Chaldeans? But this makes it a little more clear, even though you could get that from just reading the text in Genesis, that God gave the call when Abram was in Ur of the Chaldeans and his father went with him and some of his other family. But his Bible scholars think that Abram's father was actually probably originally from Haran, and so when they started the journey, you know, they were going towards the direction of the land of Canaan where they were supposed to go, but they got sidetracked and stopped in Haran for 15 years, and that's when the story picks up, and Abram was 75 years old at that point. And so Abram started to hear the call of God when in Genesis chapter 12, verse 1, it says, "The Lord said to Abraham, 'Go from your country, your people, and your father's household to the land I will show you.'" He started to make, you know, hear that call and follow God, but he got sidetracked in Haran for many years. But God, you know, was still able to eventually get Abram to keep moving, and that took the death of Abram's father, Terah, and to finally let Abram get ready to move on. And it's interesting that it seems that Terah, especially from his name and from the names that he named his children, probably would have been a worshiper of the moon god Sin, and one of the principal places of that worship was Ur of the Chaldeans, as was mentioned, but also in Haran. So this would have been very convenient. You know, he could have continued to worship the moon god and everything. But God wanted to call Abram out of all of this. But it's interesting that God didn't tell Abram where he was going, did he? He just called him to go to what kind of land? The land that I will show you. And I just can't imagine, you know, Abraham packing up all his animals and his tents and everything and passing by his neighbors and them asking Abram, "Where are you going?" And he said, "Well, I don't know." And they're like, "Well, what do you mean you don't know where you're going? Have you lost your mind? Are you crazy? You're 75 years old and you're packing up and leaving everything you know behind to go to wander around in the desert to somewhere you don't know." But God had showed Abraham that, you know, he should go, and he went. And he promised, you know, Abram many things in verses 2 and 3, which I'll read now from Genesis chapter 12. And it says, "I will make you into a great nation, and I will bless you. I will make your name great, and you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and whoever curses you, I will curse. And all peoples on earth will be blessed through you." And so here Abram is knowing that he can't have any children, and God appears to him all of a sudden and says, "I'm going to make you a great nation." And that would have been probably beyond Abram's wildest dreams. He probably would have been happy just to be able to have descendants and have that shame taken off from him. But God says, "I'm going to make you a great nation." And not only would God make Abram a great nation, but all the nations of the world would be blessed through him. And even us today, you know, in this little town of Yuma Pine, which are being blessed by hearing what the Bible says about Abram. And not only, you know, would all the nations of the world be blessed by Abram's story, but actually in verse 3, when it says all peoples on the earth will be blessed through you, what it's actually saying is all people on the earth will be blessed through your loins, through your descendants, and more so not just through Abram's descendants, the children of Israel. You know, Israel was a great nation that did a lot of good things for God, but also made a lot of mistakes and kind of shamed God's name at time. But ultimately, Abram would be able to bless the world by being in that line of people who would eventually give birth to Jesus Christ of Nazareth, which is, you know, the one in whom we have so much hope in life. With him, we would have no hope. We would have nothing. And so that was a great blessing that Abram received, even when he thought probably that he would never have children. And I find it interesting that Abram didn't seem to have anything special or important about him mentioned up to this point. I mean, usually, you know, even today and in ancient times, when people make stories about people, they make stories about heroes who accomplish great things in their own strength. Maybe they're, you know, really talented in warfare and they're or a great army general. You know, today we love stories about people who are talented at singing or whatever talent and become famous, and that's kind of the American dream. I want to become, you know, people want to become famous and rich and well-known because of their talents and because their skills and ability, or maybe, you know, they want to live the American dream and live a comfortable life because of their hard work, and that's all good and well to a certain extent, but really, I think I, myself personally, and many of us are misled by these dreams to become something great in our own strength and skill, because Abram didn't have anything going for him that would make him a great person as far as this world was concerned. But what he did have going for him was that he was willing to submit to God and follow God wherever he led. And his trials in life, you know, not being able to have children as hard as they were, probably helped to prepare Abram in a great way to be able to be humble enough to submit to God and follow him wherever he led, rather than trying to do his own thing. And so the story goes on and talks about how finally Abram left Haran and he went and started walking around and in the land of Canaan. And it says in verse 6 that Abram traveled through the land as far side of the great tree Morah at Shechem. At that time the Canaanites were in the land. The Lord appeared to Abram and said, "To your offspring I will give this land." So he built an altar there to the Lord who had appeared to him. The name Morah means teacher, and people would have gathered around this tree, this great tree, in ancient times for one reason, because trees were considered a symbol of fertility, and everybody wanted to grow a larger family back then. And so people would offer, you know, sacrifices, even human sacrifices probably, to their gods to try to have, you know, greater fertility and have more children. And also, you know, this would in general have been a site of, you know, pagan worship of false gods. And then Abram shows up and he builds an altar, you know, so that he can put a landmark there to show that there's another option besides all of these false gods, that, you know, that there's a true God that they can worship. And it's, I just find it so interesting that in this place where people are, you know, trying to talk to, you know, the gods to get more fertility, that God makes a promise to Abram about fertility, that God promises to give the land to Abram's offspring. And Abram has no offspring, and he doesn't have offspring for many years later, and he doesn't have land for many years later either. I mean, he doesn't have any land his whole life except a small plot of land that he bought to bury his wife in. And the people of Israel don't have any land until hundreds of years later, after they were stranded in Egypt and slaves. But God eventually fulfilled his promise to Abram, didn't he? And it seems like, you know, God didn't have Abram go into the land of Canaan to be some sort of fiery evangelist and, you know, with a lot of charisma, you know, preach to everybody and get everybody to become, you know, followers of the true God. But Abram showed up and he just was there. You know, his presence was a witness, and as people would have seen how he lived his life and how God continued to bless him and prosper him, you know, people would have learned about the true God. And this is comforting to me when I think about how many hundreds of years later, there was, you know, some tribes of people in the land of Canaan who had to be killed. And it's sad that they had to be killed in battle as, you know, the Israelites repossessed the land. And that's sometimes hard for me to understand. But I'm just thankful. And of course, you know, the Bible does talk about how eventually their iniquity was full and, you know, they lost their right to live in that land, and that was given to the Israelites. But I'm just thankful that God, you know, so many years before was giving their ancestors a chance to accept the true God, you know, before finally he had to drive them out of the land. And so Abram, you know, goes from place to place in the land of Canaan, which probably wouldn't have been too new for him because his family was probably nomadic people with flocks and herds and, you know, the land of Mesopotamia. But it was a little bit different this time because this place was not as, you know, with as much rain, it wasn't as lush as Mesopotamia, and there wasn't a river that they lived nearby, and they didn't live near a big city either, you know, with all the comforts and conveniences. And so they're just, you know, Abram is, you know, going from place to place to try to find the blessed places, you know, that have, you know, food for his flocks and herds. And then there's a famine in the land, and Abram has to go to Egypt. This is definitely a trial of faith, something he's not used to. And so far, it seems Abram is following God very faithfully. He, you know, he goes wherever he leads. We don't, you know, see any mention of unfaithfulness. And this is part of the reason why, you know, in chapter 15, it says that Abram believed God, and God credited it to him as righteousness. And everybody, you know, in the Bible looks back to Abram as the father of the faithful, and as somebody who's so faithful, and indeed he was. And yet, when he goes to Egypt, Abram isn't being very faithful. And maybe he had to go to Egypt, but the way he goes about it is out of character with how he's gone so far and how he lives in his future life. And so Abram decides that he will ask his wife to lie that she is his sister instead of his brother. Now, is that really a lie? Because isn't it true that Sarai was actually Abram's half-sister? And so it was true. It's not, I mean, he could have reasoned it's not really a lie, but really it was misleading. It wasn't the right thing to say. And he thought that if the Pharaoh saw Sarai, you know, because she was very beautiful, that he would kill him, you know, and take Sarai. So, I mean, he might have rationalized in his mind, well, it's much better if I say I'm the brother, then, you know, because regardless, Pharaoh's probably going to take Sarai. And, you know, if I say I'm the brother, I won't die. If I say I'm her husband, I'm going to die. But I think he was, you know, misjudging Pharaoh a little bit. I don't know if Pharaoh actually would have killed him. Maybe he would. But regardless, it, you know, never was a good idea to lie about it. And unfortunately, Abram didn't learn from his mistake, did he? He did it again many chapters later. And unfortunately, his son did learn from his mistake, not a good thing, but to follow the same mistake. And Isaac makes the same mistake. So this happens three times in the book of Genesis. And I guess if there's one thing we learn from history is that we don't learn from history. And one thing we learn from our mistakes is that we don't learn from our mistakes. So at least we can learn from Abram's mistakes. And hopefully we can, you know, remember that in our lives. And so when Abram goes and says that his sister, as Abram expects, you know, Pharaoh's servants did see that she was a very beautiful woman, even though she was in her mid-60s. And not only that, but, you know, they would have, it seems like people in those times in Egypt would have, you know, prized women who are from the East. You know, that would have been something exotic. And so they, you know, jumped on this opportunity to get a new Pharaoh, a new wife for Pharaoh. And Pharaoh gives Abram lots of gifts, like kind of like pre-wedding gifts, right? Because he thinks that Abram's her brother, and, you know, Abram's just there chilling out in Egypt, probably along the river, you know, enjoying all these gifts and his increased wealth from Pharaoh, while Sarai is in the king's court, you know, being prepared to get married eventually. But then, you know, in the middle of this story, the Bible tells us, but God sent a plague upon Pharaoh. And it seems like it would have, to me, it would have made a little more sense to send a plague upon Abram, because he was the one who was more at fault, right? But of course, God knew that that wasn't the right approach, and God sent a plague on Pharaoh's household. And then Pharaoh found out what had happened, and he's saying to Abram, what have you done? Why didn't you tell me this? You almost made me sin and commit adultery. And so Pharaoh was mad, and so I would have expected, if I hadn't read this story, that, you know, that Abram would have some dire consequences and extreme punishment from this. And I think there was some consequences that eventually came out of this, but But the Pharaoh sends Abram and his family away with all the wedding gifts, with more flocks and herds, and with more servants. Some of those servants, one of those servants probably would have been Hagar, who Abram and at Sarai's advice later made a mistake with in trying to fulfill God's promises in his own way. And I just see the mercy of God in the scripture. A lot of times, you know, there are dire circumstances to our mistakes, and there were some in this case, but God was very merciful in this case. And it's just so interesting to me that this is a lot like what happened in Egypt many years later when, you know, when the children of Israel were sent away with many gifts. That time they were kind of sent away reluctantly. They were asking to go away. But this time the Pharaoh back then was a lot smarter, and he wanted Abram to go away immediately. He didn't want to be, you know, the recipient of any more curses because of Abram's mistakes. And yeah, I just find it so interesting that even though Abram was such a faithful person, that he still made mistakes like the rest of us. And what made him faithful was not that he didn't make mistakes, but that he was, in general, willing to follow God wherever he went. He was willing to leave his family and his influences behind that were, you know, holding him back from following the true God. He was willing to leave his family behind. As important as it is to honor your family, sometimes God calls people to separate from family, from the things that are comfortable, and to do something different in life, even when it makes no sense. You know, God asks us to do a lot of things in life that don't make sense, and that sometimes doesn't make sense because Christianity is supposed to be a rational religion, right? It's not supposed to be a blind religion where you just do things blindly because, you know, without reasoning or thinking. But, you know, our human reasoning is so small compared to God's infinite, you know, foresight and wisdom, that we also have to surrender and to God and do things that make absolutely no sense. And Abram was willing to do that. And all throughout Abram's life, he never received any of the main promises that God promised to him and his descendants. He never received any land his whole life, and he didn't receive a great nation at all, because he didn't have children until like 25 years old. It's 25 years later when he was 100 years old. At least he didn't have children through Sarai as God had planned. And when I think about Abram and how he was so willing to follow God and leave his country to do what God had said, I think that this ties in well to the gospel and to Jesus, because Jesus was willing to leave everything in heaven before he was Jesus, when he was the Son of God, before he became a human. He was willing to leave everything and become a little baby in Bethlehem. And I don't think that when Jesus arrived in Bethlehem after being born, that he was thinking, you know, wow, I'm God and now I'm a baby, I'm here on earth. I'm pretty sure that baby Jesus had no idea that he was God. You know, he didn't, it seems like, you know, from the scriptures that Jesus didn't find out his mission and who he really was until he was 12 years old. And it all made sense, you know, when he was in the temple seeing the sacrifices that pointed forward to him. And so, you know, Jesus was really stepping out into the dark when he became one of us and incarnated in this world. And he was willing to do that for us, and to me, that's, you know, I'm just so thankful that Jesus died for us, and that Jesus was resurrected for us, and he still lives, and that he's interceding for us in heaven, and that he sent his Holy Spirit to be with us and comfort us and guide us in this life. And yet I think that I have overlooked the importance of the incarnation of Jesus, that Jesus, you know, I think to me that is the most significant thing in the New Testament, that Jesus would actually become a human and become one of us. And when I think about this kind of ties into the story a little bit, I guess you'll see later why, but I think about how there was ancient fables about Abram, which I'm pretty sure aren't true, that when he was in the land of Ur many years ago, before that he was totally against idolatry and that he refused to worship, you know, his father's idols. And so they threw him in a fiery furnace, and Abram didn't burn. You know, he miraculously was preserved there by God, and he was a great witness. Well, I don't think that story was true, but I find it very interesting that hundreds of years later, God would, you know, take something that was probably just a fable and make it come true in the lives of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and show that God really is a God who can keep people alive in the furnace and who can keep people safe who stand up against idolatry. And that's what he did in the life of Abram in his later life, even though that earlier story is probably false. And even in New Testament times, we think about John, who, you know, church tradition tells us, and it seems to be pretty reliable, that he was thrown into a burning pot of oil, and yet he escaped alive. And that's pretty similar to me to being thrown into a fiery furnace. And God saved John, and, you know, John was able to go and be exiled to the Isle of Patmos, which probably wasn't very fun at first, but when John was there, he had the time to and the opportunity to receive visions from God and write the book of Revelation. And in the book of Revelation, we also have some people mentioned who, like Abraham, follow God wherever he led. And those people are who? The 144,000, right, who are mentioned in Revelation chapter 14. And God is looking for people today. I mean, I don't know if we'll become part of the 144,000. I'm not sure how soon that's coming. But regardless of whether we do or not, God is looking for people today who will follow him wherever he goes. And that's, you know, really what the three angels' messages that follow and Adventism and Christianity is all about, you know, worshiping God rather than worshiping all the false gods and distractions in this life. And coming out of Babylon is definitely something that is being described in the three angels' messages. And isn't that what Abram did? He came out of, you know, Ur of the Chaldeans, which was, you know, probably a few hundred miles south of ancient Babylon, but is still in the same area. God called Abram out of Babylon, and God is calling us as well out of Babylon, out of the confusion of idolatry of this world, which, we don't have, you know, so often idols made out of metal and stone like they did back then. I mean, if you go to India or something, they might have that, but worship, you know, the gods of media and technology and so many other things. And God is calling us out of the confusion of everything that we think as humans is so important, to follow the true God wherever he leads. Also, I find it interesting that in, you know, the Revelation chapter 3, when it mentions the church of the Laodiceans, you know, which I believe is a message especially to us living in the last days, that he talks about how they're rich and increased with goods and, you know, don't know that they're poor, miserable, wretched, and blind. And really, you know, that pride that's so prevalent in today's society, because as in general, we're so prosperous. We don't have the problems that they had in ancient times of, like, you know, lots of people's children, most of their children not making it to adulthood because of all kinds of diseases and complications that we have medical services to take care of now, you know, because people, you know, didn't have it as comfortable and easy as we have it today. And so Abram was also rich. God made Abram very, very rich. But before Abram left the land of Mesopotamia, he was also kind of rich, it seems. But it seems like when the more rich Abram became, the more of those temptations it brought. And so God is calling us to leave our comforts. I mean, he's not calling us to sell everything we have to the poor necessarily. Maybe he is for some people, but, you know, it's not like we can make a broad application that God's calling all of us to get up and move to another place, of course. But in each of our individual lives, God has individual calls of things he wants us to do. And he might not be calling all of us to make radical changes today, but he may be calling some of us to make a radical change that makes no sense, and to leave the comforts of this life and to accept his love into our hearts and our lives, like the message of the Laodicean church, and like Abram did so many years ago.